You are love around you, and your life is Thank you. Way, for example. Because basically, what are they writing about when you ask yourself? A difference in interpretation? Alright. I have three friends. They're all Kashandis. And 4 years ago, I spoke to them about particular points in the philosophy. And they have their own philosophical view of it. Now, I point out to them that it is not philosophy, it's pure science. And if you can grasp it now, this is the first time your brain is shut down. You recognize it. But at that time, you couldn't interpret what it means. Time went by, and I was a bad guy. He was right to the master and said, my interpretation of what is written is very different from what it's supposed to mean. Master never said anything, he said, you continue your meditation. So the tree out to the tree, then two decided to go to India at two different times. And asked the same question at two different times. You know what I got? Didn't get the same answer? It came back exactly how I got it 4 years ago. And it was so comical in my life to laugh at it. Because the master knows, like every person who realizes anything, every question has three answers. Yes, no, and maybe. Depending upon your comprehension the time you ask it. But you see, the person who is asked it, he is maneuvering and he's busy maneuvering in his own way to make you answer the way he wants you to answer. So he never gets no answer. In essence, in the end, when he gets all three answers, he realizes where he really is. First, he gets no as an answer in a nice diplomatic way. And second, he gets yes, this contradicts no. And finally, he gets maybe. Then he's ready up the tree because we don't know which one to believe now. But he's ready now to see all of it. See this. See, science is so deep of science, you just can't ask a person and get a yes answer already. It's not such thing as a cut and dry answer for anybody because each human being is unique. Your karmic pattern, your tendencies, your nature, your internal behavioral patterns are different than the next person. And the thing that triggers your desire nature don't trigger that person's desire nature. So how can your answer satisfy everybody simply because you ask the question and you want that answer to fit the question? So the master or anyone who has got any comprehension, the moment he answers, he knows he can see what you're projecting. And he gives you an answer pertaining to no in a nice way, and you really think the answer yes. Then in actuality you say no. Then all of a sudden if you realize that you did tell him no, then you come back and ask the same question, then you say anything yes. And then you say to yourself, is he making jokes or something? Or you go and look for another teacher. Alright, you go and look for another teacher. Say 4 or 5 years. He tells you the same thing in reverse all around. Come back to find they're all saying the same thing. What? Is at the time you're asking the question, the time of comprehension, the answers are different. But there are all three answers coming back to you. Like Tarantino tells the one guy, he says, I'm not telling you anything new. All I'm telling you is exactly what I'm going to tell you again, like a broken record, over and over and over and over. So you get it in your mind that that's what it is all about. Yes, the final analysis of the whole set of science is that you must experience it by facing it. You see, and it is by the experience you really know what the true answer is. If it's maybe yes or no. But if you don't experience it, then it will be always an assumptive condition in the mind. And you're going to always get the problem that if you didn't get the right answer, you're going to ask your question again. Now, when you do experience it, what happens to you is that you say to yourself, I don't need to ask questions, I need to be more receptive. And my questions will be answered or resolved for me by the practice of the communication. Because the realized person is going to be talking all the time in different levels, and it's always bringing back certain major points that will tie in the whole thing to let you realize. And in the practice, that's what a satsang is. It'll get you to experience from different levels, so that if you are tuning in and begin to pick up, before you know it, your mental consciousness is changing. But then in a hurry to lock on and say, at last I don't want it, and I got to go out somewhere. You don't stay there. Mm-hmm. Yes, alright, there's a state, for instance, the market was over there in India. The proximity of sitting at the satsang and then experiencing a darshan and then seeing the local people come up after the darshan, no conversation has been done. And after you just speak a single thing, just look at them, and all of a sudden the thing is all over. Everybody's got to get up and go. And see that up, when the foreign guest is supposed to sit up front, and the local people sit at the back. So she got up and goes to walk out the hall, she goes to her room, and a whole host of local people are trying to look into her eyes. And they walk around, every time she walks, this is blocking her, so just looking around. So she finally said, why are you looking at me? And one woman ventured to say, you are very blessed. So look into the eyes of your master, very dark, and if a little of that can drop off for us, we'll be happy. They were looking for experience, you see. These people didn't want to lift up that book or a long discourse in philosophy or science. They wanted the actual current that would go off from one person to another. It's like shake your hand and shake your hand and shake your hand. It's that kind of a communication, you know. So love was going, and then she began to be like, all these people really understand the science. That they are being so drawn to the closeness of the thing. They live so close that they try to lock onto it. That inner experiences begin to clear up for them, that they begin to have their view, the thing. I thought that they were all talking. Years ago, there were no such things. And when the colonel went over there, he wanted to be very, very organized, and he's a good Sagittarian like myself. So what did he go and tell the map he was Sagittarian? He was very disorganized. So the map tells him, okay, you organized it. Since this was not. So it's the karma, it's the colonel's own karma. So he's trying to make something into a sort of a masonry. So there are people now can make up their forms, send in their case history, and their whole life study. So then when it's all scrutinized and analyzed, maybe we'll do something for you. But he actually does that. That's the reason why I've done. It's got to be different, you know. Like I met his, one of his research friends, Master Satellite in the West Coast. He said to me, the colonel is very militaristic in his approach to life. And he would like to make the whole world in the same category. He's lucky that he's in the master only put him in charge in the middle of this country. Now, those in the East Coast has got a little problem because the one who's in charge of the East Coast, he wants to make it up to a form, simply because he doesn't want to be outdone by the colonel. So then he writes to the master, says that I have some people who would like to be initiated. The master says, send me the name. So if you tell you, he's going to list the names, the master says, okay, I'll do it, isn't it? But that's not being efficient, and that's not being organized. The colonel, you see the colonel is over there, and you see a letter come from one of the representatives, very, very practical. He said it to me once, I said, oh, that guy is very impractical. Send a list of names and one logic piece of paper. Don't even differentiate the address and everything. How do you feel to receive a thing like that? So I said in my mind, what difference is the person sending a bunch of names and addresses? You're not initiating. It's a massive Bernini field, of course. But he is so worried about organizing, yet his output of files and computers. At the end of the world from now, we're going to know all the elect that went to heaven with Dr. Charles. Because the lobby and computers. What? All people can really get wrong up in stuff. They get it worse than the Catholic Church. At least the Catholic Church will take you in if you wanted to be a Catholic. Yeah, it's comical. Now, I'm not talking the coach there with Mr. DeVries. And he's not a representative. At least he's a strong sword and not so ridiculous. All he does is two people vouch for you and say they know you and that you read a couple of books and that they would like to get some initiation. So you're okay. You take your name and address and then you go ahead and send the information off and ask you for something to touch it. And he doesn't keep a file. He says, well, once I mail that letter, I don't care what's on it. He says, I have enough to pile up my house with a pile of and names and addresses. He says, I got enough worries to do something that's more important than that. But in the colonel, you see, the colonel retired. And he's got to set up in his mind. He still thinks he's running the army. Now you know why they have to fill forms. It isn't that the NASA didn't ask for that. In India, they don't have it, you see. But the thing is this. If they're going to be modern, it's like everything else. We adopt the worst ways of the West. Instead of adopting the good things in the West, we're adopting the worst things in the West. We're trying to get away from more people work and we're creating more people work. Initiation, it still involves giving you the keys. And if you don't use it, no matter how you get it or where you get it, it doesn't work. The thing is that you gotta meditate. Now, the keys are simply like the car out there. If you don't put the key in the ignition, it's not gonna work. You can't drive the car. And the meditation is the opportunity. And the initiation is the actual key or skeleton inside. But doing it is you as an individual that's got to do it. No master can meditate for you unless he makes that as a pledge. He's got to pledge that. Then he frees you from it. I remember a man Swami that initiated Margaret and myself into Swami. He came to this country and there was a woman who I'd met 3 weeks before. She was very ill. And she died from odd experiences. And then I visited her and he took work with her, changed her diet and so forth, he got well. And then a few weeks after he heard of this Swami was coming from India, it was the first time he was visiting America. And he's flying directly to Dallas. Well, I was supposed to meet him at 3 o'clock, but I couldn't make it, so I had seen him at 7. At 3 o'clock, he was at a friend's house. They were given a sat time. And then he walked in, this woman and the host were waiting. And all of a sudden she started to feel very nervous, very tense and jittery. So her friend said, what's the matter? She said, I'm going to the bathroom. She said, I'm in the bathroom. I just gained her composure. She said, I don't know, but I have this feeling to go over to that man and throw myself at his feet and call him father. And she said, I'm a rational person. I just don't do these things. So, anyway, she all of a sudden pushed away on the host and ran out of the room, right up to the Swami, who's an Indian and she's an American, and threw herself at his feet and said, Father, Father, don't you recognize me? The Swami's a short-lived guy. He looked at her and said, yes, daughter, I recognize you and I recognize my son. That's your son over there, too. And she has a son, you see. And he says, now, everybody puzzled. Why is this the recognition? And he says, no, look at yourself. See, your karma got you. You didn't want to listen to me. And that's the Swami kept on talking. I told you not to come to America and see what happens. Well, they know for sure. She's an Indian, she's American. was the conversation going on between this woman and this man?
And he said, you see, you didn't listen to me, and now you end up being born in America. And look at yourself, all gussied up like a screen actress. Hmm? Your occupation is an artist, what you wanted to be all the time, and I told you not to come to America. And she's bawling like mad down the street. You see, that's actually kind of a storm there. Huh? And yes, Daddy, you're right there. They're looking on at this whole thing. Yeah.
When I met her, she had a strange disease. But she had this illness, and she had these experiences of seeing lights inside. She can't eat no vegetables. She'll get deathly ill. She has to survive on meat, very rare, and alcohol. She must have it, the doctor's orders. Her son had the same disease. Now, she's a well-qualified artist, earns her livelihood through art, and if you see her, she looks like a screen star. As you said, all gussied up. Very beautiful woman. To backtrack now, it's the Swami's actual daughter. When he was a young man, in his 20s, late 20s, going on to his 30s. And he was working with Gandhi at the time. And the girl was just about 18 years of age. So she, in India, he was married at the age of 13. So his daughter was 2 years at the age of 15. So if you add 18 years to 17, his age would be 35. He'd be 35 years of age, and she would be 18. Now, she wanted to come to America at the age of 18. He didn't want her to come to America. He says, don't go to America. The people over there eat meat. They live on alcohol. And of all the places you want to go is to Hollywood to study art. He didn't want her to go, and he took her up in the mountains to teach her to his guru. And while she was up in the mountains, she had contaminated food and died. And this son, which was a young boy, he was 11 years of age, he ran away, and he had contaminated food and died. And the father never could forgive himself. And all through the years, he pledged that someday, by the grace of God, he may see his child in their reincarnated body. Now, show you how karma works. We die and get what we wish for. The only reason we reincarnate is our unfulfilled desire. Her unfulfilled desire was to come to America to be an artist. And the brother follows the sister. So, she was born in America. She's a very wonderful artist, makes a profession by painting. She looks like a screen star stepping off the stage. And she got the rarest disease in the world, that she can't eat vegetables or no bread or no fruit. She's got to eat meat rare and drink alcohol to stay alive. Now, after he recognized her and told her everything, she wanted to meditate. He says, no, you can't meditate because the condition you're in is no good. But the grace, he will meditate for her. And all she had to do was repeat the holy name. And in a few months, her whole body came back normal. But he already, when he was living, his thing in Dallas, he stayed about a week. He took out his begging bowl as a Swami. And he said, this is my only last possession in this world, and I'm giving it to you. Outside that, I don't own anything, not even the clothes on my back. You can take away. So he gave her his begging bowl. And she lives in Dallas, and he went back to India. But it was that night that when I met him, this happened in the afternoon and the daytime. And that night, I was standing in the room in the back of the hall with Margaret. Never saw the man before. And he just entered, and it was over 300 people. And he looked around all over the room, and he walks
straight out through the room, and he came over to me and said, "Gonna make a swami right now." Now you could imagine Margaret's reaction. Well, if you become a swami, you renounce the world. You leave your wife and you go away and everything, that's it. The end of the marriage, divorce, no divorce. It's it. So Margaret said, "What about me?" He says, "I'll make you a swami and you don't have to quit nobody."
I remember her telling us that story. I think the first night she came,
she was
quite upset.
She's still upset about it. She hasn't reconciled the fact that it was the end of her marriage. Say this, the more you try to understand, and it's only, I think, really here in the West, even in India, they are not discussing openly the science of the soul on a scientific level. We are doing more discussion of this science of the soul on a scientific level, a very informal attitude. In India, it's all philosophy, it's still carried away in the nebulous regions, and not getting down to the real facts behind it. And I've grown up with the philosophy, and I know the philosophy, but I'm too much a scientific minded to only hang on to philosophy and not try to work the science of it. So, a lot more will be done with the science of the soul, or yoga, because those who are deeply interested in it to see it do something more constructive than just the philosophy will get something out of it, so that more people can enter these levels, these states of awareness, without having to spend long, tedious hours. You see, you can spend hours and years meditating to enter certain levels, to get certain releases of certain karmic tendencies. And by virtue of that, we can induce the same result by 1.5 to 2 hours recycling and put you in that level. And you have all those tendencies in you that you can start your life much more effectively than 8-10 years of sitting down there. I spent many years in non-meditating to realize these levels. Only to come to realize that they were shorter ways, but was never traditionally explained. It was for Putin to go outside of the boundary lines of yoga because Kundalini is a bad thing, and all, to try to find out what lies behind these boundary lines. So come to know that you could actually do these things in much simpler ways, and that we really tried to build up tradition and build up a lot of deism. And less scientific understanding and more freedom. So, more and more as we penetrate into the science, a lot of things are breaking free for the first time. But we can correct a lot of things in our nature karmically from the understanding of how this energy works in the spine. You see, the lure of the yoga is that once you awaken Kundalini, you'll be free from a lot of things. But they never really specify what a lot of things mean. And you'll be gifted a lot of powers, but they never really specify how these powers really work. So they're very generalized in their writing. But when you start to go into it more in detail and analyze it, you start to see that there's more to it than just the allurement. But the actual science has to do with understanding how the body works in sleep, how it works in partial sleep, and how it works in wide awake sleep, and what tendencies are governed by certain endocrine actions. Then as you comprehend that, you begin to trigger them by reflex motion. You see, these were all no-nos at one time. You dare not touch a person in meditation, lest he enter into some weird experience. You can touch a person in a different point in their appearing now and turn on different levels of consciousness by recycling. And therefore break free of a whole host of tendencies and blockages that are really not damaging things. They are strictly psychological patterns. And in their psychological patterns, they are negative charges. What we call addiction in the psychological language is a repetition of a particular problem over and over, producing an addiction. In the chemical condition is that a certain amount of toxins have accumulated to create the tension. These were all the different hypotheses for addiction and the tendencies for addiction. Now we know that these are not 100% accurate, that addiction is electropressure of a galvanic nature in the cells, and that the therapeutic conditions can be induced to release it. And they are releasing tremendous conditions of addiction in a person by merely stimulating what we call certain triggering points in the body. These are what they call pools of negative charges that are released for the first time. Simply because people have dared to go beyond where there is no land. Same thing with deafness and deaf mute. There is a certain acupuncture point in the ear of the body that was forbidden to acupuncture at one time. Nobody never told them why. And I have read that for years, it was globally. I never said why. You know that it was just forbidden. And if you study physiology, it's too close to the hypothalamus, which would be a forbidden area to go stick a needle in. Because you can puncture the medulla and that will be the end of the person. You paralyze them or kill them. Yet, 8 years ago, somebody broke through, fell in China, simply because he had a deaf-mute relative and he wanted to do something for the deaf-mute relative. So he experimented his own body, right in the very area which was considered forbidden. So he pushed the needle and he was judging from his own body the reaction. If he could induce what is called nerve torque, nerve muscle torque, metal torque when you turn it, if he can induce what we call nerve torque, then he would actually be affecting a change in the area that regulates the hearing, if you could induce such a condition. So by sticking the needle gradually and feeling for the sensation and taking his time, and according to the traditional teachings, you only stick this needle about 1 centimeter. That's as far you ever go, and you're forbidden to go beyond that point. He went 1.5 and didn't feel anything. Then he went to 2 centimeters, and the first thing he felt, his brain started to ache. And he went 2.5. Well, 3 is exactly where the hypothalamus is, and 0.5 more, you're in the hypothalamus, you're in the medulla. At 2.5, his body had what we call nerve torque for the first time, and you just rotate the needle and pull it out. From the nerve torque, and exactly would be necessary to work on a deaf mute, because a nerve torque would cause the ears to ring. So he went to look for the first deaf mute with his cousin, and he pushed it in 2.5 cm. Right in that particular acupuncture point, pulled it out, the cousin was hearing. He broke through a forbidden area. Same thing is happening now in yoga. We are breaking through areas or taking on things that were considered no-no by the ancient yogis, and trying to find out why they're saying no-no and where the real importance of the thing lies. Is it in the psychic energy? Is it in the so-called extrasensory abilities? Is it in the tendencies? Or is it karmic patterns? Or is it because if you go a little more, you can gain the control to correct all these things in a natural way? So, in recycling, we have come to the realization that we can actually go into areas which were considered not practical at one time without the aid of a teacher, and now release pent-up emotional conditions that are blocking and inhibiting the energy flow and making the person back to normal and freeing themselves without these tendencies of fear and insecurity. They're actually breaking through from the areas that the condition is. More and more as we in the West here study the yoga and study all the oriental sciences that are coming down, we will be making our own headway, or we are making our own contribution to the science of the soul. And equally true, the concept of Bandara, we are making our own contributions to it. A lot of things are happening over here. In other words, we're doing it a little different, and we're expanding the concept. So we're entitled to our own. Yogananda used to say, and I like what he used to say at times, very few masters put it the way he put it. You first have to imitate till you can originate. Gandhi said imitation is the best form of flattery. But it's good to imitate, but it's better to originate. But you first have to imitate before you can originate. Because you have to know what you're imitating, and then you have to go past the point of imitation into origination. You see, like Buckminster Fuller? He imitated a square box house until he originated a round top house. It's good to imitate, but it's better to originate. But you first have to imitate before you can originate. Because you have to know what you're imitating, and then you have to go past the point of imitation into origination. See, like Buckminster Fuller, he imitated a square box house until he originated a round top house. And we imitated the pyramid and ended up in the airframe. And I want to thank everybody for this wonderful retreat in Mandara. And I know I carry all your love with us to travel. I hope everybody can come back to Tyler. Well, I'll be back here in August, I understand.
West of the way?
Yeah.
Back here for a minute.
Let's see how we can squeeze on the DSO. For the group here.
Do you know what dates? Do you have any idea?
The wedding is on the 10th of August. So I don't know. I'm waiting for the information from the family. So offhand, I don't know the exact date that they want me to come up.
Now, if that's true, that will be the first time that we've known when you were going to come beyond about 6 weeks before you actually got here.
Well, I have to be on time for the wedding.
Right.
it's going to be funny. I don't know how it's going to work out between a Catholic and a rabbi and myself. If they're going to have the rabbi or if they're going to have the priest.
I don't know what that means.
The boy's mother wants a Catholic wedding, and the girl mother wants a Jewish wedding. And the girl herself
wants you. Wants you.
What's your wedding?
We have all three.
rabbi and the priest are pretty well made for each other.
Have they decided whether to hold it in a church, a synagogue, or a public building?
Or backyard. I don't know. There's a toss up between them. What they're going to decide. It'll be interesting though. I'll tell you what I'll do though. I'll wear my rosary and my yarmulke and my swamika. What more can I ask? I'm even supplying roses from Thailand. Yeah, I got a yarmulke and it's a Russian one too, you know. And I'll wear my swami robe. And then I'll wear my rosary. I've got to be all faith fellowship then.
That's right.
I remember one wedding that Tom Adelstein, I performed his wedding for him. He's Jewish, and the girl that he married, non-Jewish, Beth from Virginia Beach. So on the retreat, we had the wedding, we had the cupola. It was a little arbor, you know, and you hang all the fern and everything. And then the table was there. And I had my own yarmulke. But the grandfather came, at the time of the wedding, and he took out his yarmulke yet too. He said, this is for you, I want you to use this one. This is special for my grandchildren's wedding. Yeah, it's a beautiful wedding.
Yarmulke, do they make orange
formula shirts
with Roman
cloth? Oh. Actually, the cardinals of Rome, they wear a yarmulke. And in the old Chinese homes, when you go and they, on the pigtail, they used to wear. Right in the early pioneer days in this country, you'll see pictures of the Chinese men, they had yarmulke. Actually, yarmulke came from way back in time. It was the concept of the nail covering his head, but I used to think it's that of falling in the pool. Because they grew the hair so long, they used to put his little skull cap. But it's tradition, you know, from different countries.
I don't know how we can thank you for coming up and spending this time with us.
Well, thank you.
Been the most wonderful experience, I think, for everybody.
Well, I think the Master and the Lord is responsible for it all, because everything is falling into place for the finish.
Next time, if it keeps growing the way it is, it's just going to have a bigger house. The Master is going to have to provide us with a bigger house.
This is a nice room, though.
That's his responsibility. You worry about it. I'm worried about it. You know, down in Texas, I got the same thing. It's their responsibility. I'm not going to worry about it.
Why don't
we
give him a big home?
You know?
Yeah. Can we give you a big
home instead? I
appreciate it,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was just waiting for someone to do that.
We are one in Thank you. shine upon you, all those around you, and the pure light within you, guide your way home.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Yeah.